Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Morning, everybody. I've seen quite a few of you on the stand yesterday and earlier this morning. The purpose of the exercise is to give you a briefing on who on earth Tavistock Investments are, what we do, and why I would suggest you might like to invest in shares in the company. Tavistock is an AIM-listed financial services company, and we're very much new kids on the block in terms of UK retail financial services. We only set this business up 5 years ago, and what I'm going to step you through is what we've accomplished since then, but more importantly, where we think the business is going to go over the next 3 to 5 years. I've got a lot to cover, so I won't necessarily pick up on every detail on every slide. I'm aiming to talk to you for 25 to 30 minutes. So to sort of get cut to the chase, why do I think you should invest in Tavistock shares? And I'm going to talk through each of these topics in detail in a moment. First of all, we have an innovative and ambitious strategy. So we are taking a different approach to most other businesses in the space. In the 5 years that we've been running, we've already begun to prove that our business model works. And that business model is geared up for rapid expansion. The leadership team, he says modestly, is high quality and experienced. The high quality, you'll judge for yourselves in a minute. The experience you can probably get from the grey beard. And I think what we're beginning to demonstrate is the capability to grow the business exponentially, both in what we've accomplished over the last 4 years in terms of the numbers and where we're going to go. To return to the first point, innovative and ambitious. I think it may seem a bold claim, given we're 5 minutes old and we're a small business, but we are minded to change the world of UK retail financial services. Why did we decide to build a business in the financial services sector? Oliver, who's our chairman, is sitting in the front row here, and I, this is the third time we've run a public company. Why have we decided to embark upon a business within financial services? Firstly, it's just the scale of the opportunity. It's an enormous sector. There are substantial and significant opportunities to make money. The second is that it's a sector that where things have not always run smoothly. So it's a sector that is quite literally littered with the corpses of the businesses that have done things wrong and who've had models that were ineffective. There have been numerous well-publicized scandals in terms of poor advice and mis-selling and so on and so forth. As a consequence, in a way, it's a sector that is very heavily regulated and properly so. But the aspirations of the regulator, whilst admirable, are not always reflected in reality in terms of the execution of those rules and regulations. So there's a significant burden on advisory businesses and investment management businesses that, frankly, unless you're extremely efficient, gets in the way of operations to some extent. And lastly, and probably most importantly, we want to build a business that matters. We actually care about what we do. We want to make a difference. And in particular, we want to make a difference to the consumer and the outcomes that the middle England, if you like, get from their financial lifetime financial planning. What's the strategy? Well, it's to build an integrated business. What do I mean by integrated? I mean a business that provides both financial advice and investment management products. Why? Because essentially we make a higher margin out of the investment products, but 5 minutes old, no one had heard of us in 2013. We had no track record whatsoever. We're really only going to encourage clients of our own advisors to invest in our products at that point in time. Now things are different. We are looking to build a model that is lower cost and higher margin than most of the competition. We're certainly looking to build a model that manages to a lower level of risk, and that is about how effectively and efficiently you oversee the advice that's provided to clients, principally. We need to run a model where investment management is the heartbeat of the business. And quite simply, that's because it's a higher margin activity than advice, and where you're both providing advice and looking after money, you make more profit. We want to use technology as wisely and profitably as we can. And that's about rolling out a fully comprehensive back office system across the business from a control and a marketing and a client care perspective, and integrating that wherever we can with our distribution system. And finally, it's about multiple channels of distribution. So I've talked briefly about distribution through our own advisors. We're also looking to distribute to clients through advisors outside of our group, because there are many more of those than we employ. And finally, we're looking to market to clients directly, so get into the direct-to-consumer space. And I think the way in which we're doing that is again, different to what's gone before. What sort of people are we? I think that's important. If I'm a shareholder in a business, I want to feel that I can believe and trust the management team, and I like the way they operate. So whilst we're looking to build a very modern business, essentially our values are somewhat old-fashioned. We believe there is a right way to do everything. We care about client outcomes, and we do everything we can to ensure an ethos where every management decision that's taken is taken in terms of doing what's in the best interest of the client. So I never meet the clients. I've no idea whose money we're running. They're either looked after by our advisors, or they come in from outside the group. We don't know who they are, but that doesn't mean we've got any less responsibility to care about the outcomes as far as their investments are concerned. So we want to be a business that others look up to. We want to set high standards across the group. And we want to treat all the stakeholders in our business fairly and openly and honestly. And that's everyone from the clients, who frankly are the most important, through our advisors, which are a combination of self-employed and employed guys, employees, and of course, the shareholders. I think I could talk for an hour and a half about our credentials and not manage to convey what this slide can. So these are our business partners. Every single one of them has spent decades and, in the case of the Law Society, 200 years, building a brand. They're not going to risk that brand by allowing us to have it in presentations, on fact sheets, in brochures, on our website, to publicly proclaim the fact that we work with them, unless they are entirely comfortable with what we do and how we do it. So BlackRock, the biggest asset manager in the world, Morgan Stanley, the second biggest investment bank, and the Law Society, I'm sure you all know who they are. So we manage money in association with the top two, and we set up a joint venture, in a sense, operation with the Law Society last year called Tavistock Law, which provides financial advice to their private client members. And that business is formally endorsed by them. I'll return to this specific slide later on. I'm really only putting the two graphs up there to show you that when I say we're proving that the model's working, that's what I mean. So there's a key correlation between funds under management on the left and EBITDA on the right. And the business is already moving rapidly up the J curve. Second point is that I claim that we've already proven the model works. And I think the key thing when you're setting up a business, and it isn't the first time we've done it, I think the key thing when we're setting up a business is to plan for a business model that's going to deliver in line with your objectives. And the key point about our industry is that the provision of financial advice is higher risk and lower reward than the management of assets. The management of assets is lower risk and higher margin. So that's why Tavistock Wealth, which is the asset management business within the Tavistock Investments Group, that's why Tavistock Wealth sits at the heart of the operation. And the concentric rings are the layers of distribution into which we're seeking to deliver those products. So the dark grey ring in the centre, it's our own group advisors, for the reasons I explained earlier. We had to start from there. But we're now also marketing to advice firms outside of our group throughout the UK. We've also launched a direct-to-consumer app very recently, since our year-end in the early part of April. And then finally, we have set up a very small embryonic offshore operation, Tavistock Wealth Global, and we're looking to market the same services, products and services offshore in various international markets. Slightly more detail And really, I highlight in the red, I suppose, the key points. You know, we run client money as if it's our own. That really covers it all. The advisory business, whilst important to us for a number of reasons, is essentially there to provide us with distribution for the investment products. And we are now at a stage where, because we've begun to demonstrate our capabilities, we have got other partners that are working with us to distribute our products through their own businesses. Now, I can't stand here right now and name many of them. I can name Lighthouse that we signed a contract with in December. I can name the Law Society that we signed a deal with in the middle of last year. As you might expect, we're talking to other organizations. Now, those guys may be looking at having our protected products in their bond offering or their SIP offering. They may be looking at wanting us to deliver part or all of their centralized investment proposition. But I will be surprised and disappointed if we don't announce a number of other relationships of this scale during the course of this year. And what does it take to succeed? You've got to do a good job. You've got to increase your product range. And you've got to widen the distribution. I mean, this isn't rocket science. The timeline, I'm not going to step through every detail. The essence of it is that we have been extremely fussy in terms of the businesses that we've acquired. So we have only acquired six businesses. We have subsequently disposed of part of one of those, which we sold to Sanlam last year. And we've got to a stage where we have, I think as of now, we have 186 advisors and we have 141 employees. We announced our results on Tuesday. You can download the results from our website. Off this slide, I would highlight a couple of things. The key thing from a delivery perspective is the doubling of EBITDA. As I said, EBITDA has more than doubled every year for the last 5 years. The top line, you may wonder why the revenues declined. And the revenues declined because we are very strict taskmasters in terms of oversight and review of our advisory business. And we have three types of business within, on that side of the group. One is the high net worth operation, where those guys are employed. They tend to be, you know, the top of the tree in terms of quality and capability and experience. We then have two networks where the advisors are not employed within the group, so we don't carry the cost burden of that overhead. One of those businesses deals with self-employed individuals called registered individuals, and the other deals with third-party firms, what are called appointed representatives. The most distant relationship is the last one with the appointed representatives, and we have, over the last 18 months, basically gone through every one of those firms and determined which we want to work with in the long term and which we don't. And those that we didn't have politely been removed from the network. That's the reason behind the reduction in revenue, despite the fact that the revenue for the investment management operation went up by 33%. And just on a like for like, if excluding exceptionals, the operational profit has increased for the last 3 years. You can see in the middle by exceptional items, the 861 in the left column, that's the one-off profit we made from the disposal of part of a business that we've acquired to Sanlam last year, which is why that's highlighted and separated out of the numbers. And I guess the big point is that we've launched a dividend. I mean, we're never going to be looking for shareholders who come to us because they're looking to get a 5% return on their money. But what we are planning on doing is managing an upward dividend stream, because we think it's the appropriate thing to do. It also means that we get assessed within the appropriate top segment within the AIM market as the business grows. Covered much of this now, but really, if you look at the chart on the left, and there's a clearer chart with the numbers in the chairman's statement in the report and accounts, but we launched the investment proposition on the 1st of October 2014. At that point, clearly, the assets were zero. Assets as of the 31st of March, 945 million within our own funds. And the EBITDA has increased, as I said just a moment ago, to 1.475 million. And the nature of the business model is it's highly repetitive and predictable. So something like 95%, if not more, of our investment management income repeats the following year. The assets are very sticky. So the hard part of raising assets from the consumer marketplace is that the average ticket size is low. So the average ticket size is probably about 70 grand. But the plus side is the assets are very sticky because most of those clients are managing their finances through a lifetime. And pre-pension freedom, a few years ago, the average investment life cycle was 13 years. It's way over that now. So sticky assets, it's predictable level of profitability. And within the advice business, it's about 2/3 of the revenue that repeats. So advisors charge clients an upfront fee for the additional work they do when they first meet them and get to understand their affairs. And then there's an annual rate of charge, which depending on the nature of the work the advisor does, will vary between 0.5% and 1%. This is just the structure of the group. You can look at that in more detail if you want to study the plan. But essentially, on the left-hand side, the investment management business, Tavistock Wealth, and then the three advisory businesses that I've already described. Below that are the brand names that we still employ across the group for various reasons. So just to touch a little bit more detail on the businesses. To start with Tavistock Wealth, the key thing in terms of how we run the money, I mentioned earlier, we look after client money as if it was our own. And the key thing is just that unlike a fund manager, our interests are aligned with the advisors who look after the clients and the clients themselves. By which I mean, when a client sits down with a financial advisor for the first time, they talk about their financial affairs, they go through an attitude to risk process, they discuss their capacity to take a loss, and the outcome of those discussions is a risk rating for the client. So within the system that we employ, that client will be rated on a scale of 1 to 10. Excuse me. Ones and twos are extremely cautious people, and really they want to leave their money in an interest-bearing account somewhere. We don't provide investment solutions for those guys. 9 and 10 are clients who bluntly want to take more risk than we're prepared to manage. So we look after 3 through 8. 3 through 8 is 94% of the market. And actually within the 3 through 8 range, 4 to 6 is about 75% of the market. So what we need to do is we need to manage investment portfolios that take an agreed amount of risk 365 days a year. So we don't know when, you know, Mr. Jones or Mrs. Smith is going to need to withdraw her money. So we have a responsibility to look after that money very tightly within the level of risk exposure, volatility, that they have agreed with their advisor. That's why we hedge the offshore holdings, because you can't do that. Bear in mind how I've described where the money sits. You can't do that with cautious to moderate investors, leaving them exposed to fluctuations in the currency market. So we hedge away the vast majority, not all, but the vast majority of the non-sterling holdings for a UK-based investor. Credentials I spoke about earlier. And I suppose last year was very pleasing in that we were nominated for a lot of awards. We were a finalist in 4. So bearing in mind, as I said, we haven't even got a 5-year track record for running the money yet. I think that's quite an achievement. The funds under management have risen every year. I've talked about those numbers. And fundamentally, back to what I said about, you know, our brand, our ethos, I like to think we're honourable people. And in this industry, whilst the regulator strives for transparency and openness with clients, there's an awful lot about retail financial services that is not transparent. So we're very clear. We charge you once and only once for what we do. So we are running our own funds. If we organise those funds into portfolios as a discretionary fund manager, we don't charge you a DFM fee on top of the income we get as the manager of those funds. And people like the fact that we are honest about what we're doing. And fundamentally, we're driven by protecting people against the next bear market. Yes, you want to make money whilst the bull market run continues, but it isn't going to last forever. And there are many clients that we have who just can't afford to take the typical loss out of a bear cycle, which would be, I think the average in the 11 bear cycles over 20% in the last century is a 36% hit. So we're dealing with, you know, middle England. Lots of those guys are in retirement. They're approaching retirement, or quite frankly, they don't earn enough money towards their retirement to be able to take that sort of exposure, which is why we've launched a couple of the guaranteed products that I'll talk about in a minute. Advice business, yeah, we've got 185 guys, as I said. We've got a client base collectively with somewhere between 3 and 3.5 billion of assets under advice. Our role with the advisors is to help them develop their and grow their business, help them to be the best advisors that they can. And we also include within their contract a retirement guarantee option. So what I mean by that is it's a one-way ticket. They can build a custom base. These are the self-employed guys. They can build them a custom base, and then when they want to retire, we guarantee to buy it from them. We can never make them sell it to us. So they can work with us for a decade and then go work somewhere else if they choose. But it's just part of what we believe is the appropriate way to run a business in terms of loyalty and cooperation. And we are looking to expand the advisory business. So the bulk of our energies on distribution now are facing outside of the group. But we're still looking to expand the advisory business, employing the right people. They are increasingly difficult to find. Recruitment of advisors is a known phenomenon across the space at the moment. And partly that's because of the competition from fintech, direct-to-consumer offerings, and so on. But where we find good people, we'll certainly look to retain them. And last year, the FT run a ranking list for advice firms in the UK. We were rated 10th, again, from a standing start in under 5 years. I think that's pretty impressive. We were ahead of a lot of large companies who've been in the business for decades, some of them in the FTSE 100, though I won't say who they are. So report card on the last 12 months, continue to grow funds under management, launch the guaranteed products I will finally explain to you in a moment. We have upped our professional services focus, particularly in terms of the legal profession, and we developed the automated platform that we launched in the early part of April. I modestly proclaimed our leadership credentials earlier. I think partly you get an idea of that from listening to me or talking to us on the stands. You also need to understand how we approach what we do. And the first key point is, if you're moving into a new sector and you're setting up a business, you'd be an idiot if you didn't try and learn from the mistakes that other people have made before you. So we keep a close eye on failed businesses. We keep a close eye on successful businesses in the space, because nobody is capable of generating all the good ideas. Secondly, really is to explain the process and what we mean by the tag of revolutionary thinking. Revolutionary thinking is not about having a bunch of guys sit in a room for a week to come up with a big idea. Revolutionary thinking is a mindset. It's about everyone in the company asking themselves questions, looking at their role and responsibilities, and trying to identify the marginal gains that they can accomplish in terms of what they do, and that the move towards excellence is a process of evolution. Just in terms of vintage, Oliver and I, as I said, this is the second business on the AIM market. We run a business on the official list. I've been running companies for a long time, and Oliver is a vastly experienced individual in terms of corporate finance and life generally. The financial services sector experience of the NEDs is crucial. We have never had a non-executive director in any of our businesses who didn't understand the sector in which we operated. I just don't see the point otherwise, but lots of people seem to do it. And in particular in our sector, it's about governance and compliance and regulation. So we have two equally long in the tooth individuals who've been in the space for a long time, who sit beside us in the boardroom to make sure that we are doing everything the way we should. And then we have a number of very talented individuals who combine, in my opinion, into the best team I've ever worked with, who have a lot of experience in their specific areas of focus. My final point is about the exponential growth potential of the business. And really back to what I said at the very beginning, whilst it's a bold claim, we are looking to change the way people think about retail financial services in the UK and the way in which they approach it. I haven't put this chart up to talk you through it. I've merely put it up to highlight the fact this is the way markets work. So this is the last almost century of the UK equity markets. And the important parts on that graph from a retail client's point of view are the red elements that show the bear markets that we have experienced. And we're getting towards the end of a long bull run. So when that bear market comes, we need to protect the people whose money we're looking after. That's why we launched the guarantee products. So bear with me for a moment, because when you mention protected products or guaranteed products to many people, they've had their fingers burned on them in the past. They've heard about them. They didn't work. Da, 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 da. We have built a type of product that is different to what has gone before. And I'll do the comparison for you in just a second. We want to protect people against catastrophe, as I said, in terms of the losses they could incur. We changed the nature of the product in terms of the way it works. So the historical stuff that didn't work very well generally used a form of insurance called CPPI to protect the level of guarantee that was offered to the client. And the difficulty with that form of insurance is that in bear markets, in downturns, you are forced as an investment manager to turn an increasing proportion of the portfolio to cash. And what essentially happens is in a bear market, those products become what's called cash locked. They become 100% cash, and you can't revert the process. So you're stuck in cash, and you're stuck in cash for the term of the product. What we have done, we've launched two products. The flagship product has a 90% high watermark capital guarantee. And the important part is the bit in red. So to give you an example of what we mean by that, if you invest £1,000 today and the sky falls in tomorrow, worst case scenario, you get back £900. If that £1,000 investment, just to keep my arithmetic easy, is worth £2,000 in 5 years' time, at that point in time, you're guaranteed 90% of the 2,000. So you're guaranteed 1,800. So what this product enables you to do is still benefit from a bull market. Now, you won't benefit from the bull market to the same extent as if you had an unprotected product, because there's a cost to the protection. It's not a big cost, but there is a cost. But you can still make money on the upside and lock in profit for as long as that continues. And what matters in terms of providing guarantees is who sits on the other end of it. And the who sits on the other end of it is Morgan Stanley. So Morgan Stanley manage the put option, which I'll explain now, within the product. And they know that the way in which the product is constructed won't fail. And that's wonderful. So they can guarantee that to us with a lowercase g. But from a marketing perspective, I said to them, I need to be able to go to people and say, you actually guarantee it. So each fund has a formal contract between the fund and Morgan Stanley, whereby they guarantee that the NAV, the price of the fund, can never fall below 90% in one case, 85% in the other, of its highest ever value. And the reason why one is 85 and one is 90 is just that the 85% product takes a little bit more risk in terms of the investment portfolio. Explain the put option. Simplistically, if you invest £100 today, £95 goes into investable assets, £5 buys a four-year rolling put. Over those 4 years, if the value of the investable assets declines, the value of the put increases, and vice versa. Morgan Stanley are responsible for managing that. There are a series of algorithms that determine how much of the £100 we can invest at any point in time. And in periods of higher volatility, such as last December, the amount that gets invested declines. So it would have declined in December from 95, I think it declined to £65 out of the 100. Some of the additional money is held in cash, and the cost of the put increases slightly. And it's rare, because we're a very good manager of volatility, which is why not every fund manager in the country can run these products, and I'll get back to that in a moment as well. In December, the investable proportion fell to 65%. By early part of February, it was back at 100%. Just the way we run money and the way the product works. I said I'd do the comparison. I'll do this very quickly because we're going to have no time for questions otherwise. So historically, you can read the column more quickly than I can talk to you about it. But essentially, these products offered a lower level of guarantee, were very expensive to own, had a fixed term, they're structured notes, and the protection mechanism was a form of insurance that ended up cash locking in many cases. And the extent of the protection was generally on your initial investment rather than the high watermark that we offer. So we've got a higher level of protection. The cost of ownership, actually, since the product's launch, is 1.33%. There is no fixed term. You know, all of our funds are UCITS. They're UCITS 4 funds. UCITS 4 is the pan-European gold standard for running money in funds in terms of consumer access and protection. They use the put option I've described. They don't cash lock. You know, if you come to the stand and look at a brochure, there's a brochure there where the analysis was done from Morgan Stanley based on our actual investment portfolio, which runs in another fund of ours, which launched on the 1st of October 14, and prior to that, their own back testing. And I can explain to you how and why the product can never cash lock. Highest ever value, and yeah, there's a contract from Morgan Stanley. Briefly, we launched a D2C product just after the year end. It's branded iStock. It's offering consumers free of charge accounts. Currently an ISA or a general investment account, within a few months it will also include a SIP. Also means you can transfer in existing ISAs or SIPs. It is free because we're only offering you the ability to invest in Tavistock Wealth investment products. We launched it with one fund, which is the 90% capital guaranteed fund. And we did that deliberately because we wanted to make sure that it worked exactly as it should, that consumers found the experience was straightforward. We weren't being inundated with queries on a help desk. They were able to open an account, et cetera, et cetera. And a month in, all of those boxes are ticked. So we will be introducing more funds over the course of the next 6 months. And probably by the end of 6 months, we'll have all of the Tavistock Wealth investment offerings available. And we will distribute that product both direct to the consumer through Google ads and social media campaigning, and also through advisors inside our group and outside it. And we also use partners. So some of our partners want white label versions of the app that they can use for their own members or clients. Where can you get it? You can download it from the App Store, Google Play. You can go to the website and download it as a PWA. And so therefore we have direct to consumer distribution that way. It's almost more important to us that we distribute the product through advisors. And essentially why they would do it is because we're cutting out the middle guy who's charging the client 0.25% a year on their assets. Old words, broker, new words, platform. And we want to lock in the customer base. So it's going to be very difficult for advisors to recommend clients switch away from our offering if they're going to move them somewhere where there's an extra 0.35% on the bill in terms of where the assets sit. So yeah, we want to disrupt the D2C space. We're going to do that by raising assets through advisors as well as direct to the consumer. So just finish off. These are the things I mentioned earlier. I would hope to have gone some way to convince you that they're true. And the other reason really to invest is because the timing's right. You know, the proverbial is going to hit the fan in terms of financial markets. Whether it's 1 year, 2 year, 3 years time doesn't matter. We all know it's coming. We've got investment solutions that can fix that. And we've just launched the guaranteed funds and the D2C app. So we're good to go.
Hello. Hi. Really enjoyed the presentation. So well done. Thank you. Thank you for coming to see us. You talked a lot about values at the beginning, transparency, honesty, openness. And I think that's a really key, seems to me really key part of your business. You talked about the dead companies that have gone before.
Yeah.
Can you explain why then? You showed a brilliant chart with funds under management going up, EBITDA going up, but you stripped out share-based payments. It doesn't seem to be very transparent from an investment point of view, and I wonder if you want to explain that a bit further.
What would you like to explain it, Oliver? Well, introduce yourself to the room.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Oliver Cook. I'm the chairman. I don't think we're hiding share-based payments. It's in our charts, isn't there? But I mean, share-based payments, is, if you're not aware where they are, it's the charge you put through your P&L account as a result of share options offered to senior management and key employees. If you then dig a bit further into those share options, you'll find that the vast majority of them are performance related and they're well and truly out of the money. Nobody's going to make any money out of those share options until shareholders, until share price gets to 5.25p, 6p or 6.5p. I think investors would be very happy to see us make a lot of money out of our share options at the time. Share-based payments are a requirement, but from the auditors, you have to put a charge through over the period, a potential period of a vesting of an option. And there's a charge, but I mean, there's nothing hidden about it. We're not embarrassed at all. We'd be like to be on your side.
And fully explained in the accounts, which you can pick a copy of off the stand. Thanks for the question. Yeah.
Just to say, thanks as well for the presentation. Very interesting and informative. I was just intrigued by the chart about the discretionary funds under management, and it just appeared that there might be a slight slowing in terms of the growth. Could you add a comment on that?
Well, a couple of things, really. Last year was a difficult year. I mean, you're an investor, the room's full of investors, you all know that, and particularly the last 6 months of the year. So normally, in terms of growth, you expect the value of the assets that are already invested to give you a sort of 5 to 10% hike. But also the fact that the bulk of our attention historically has been with our existing advisors. And our advisors are independent. So it's all very well they advise clients on 3 billion plus. We aspire towards 50% of that. So we think that we will get between 45 and 50% of clients' assets, the clients of our advisors, over time. And we're sitting at about 33% at the moment. So the rate of penetration of those assets will slow and has slowed. And it also takes time because we haven't been able to start building distribution relationships outside of the group until very recently because we had no track record and people didn't know who we were. So now we have, I think it's 23, it's either 23 or 25 firms outside the group that are recommending our investment solutions to their clients. But more importantly, we've launched the guaranteed products. You know, they had 100 million in them by year end. They're being extremely well received. Yes, some of that money is switching. We make marginally more margin in them. We'd be foolish to have done it otherwise, but it's all fully disclosed. But a lot of very big companies are interested in those products because genuinely there is not another product like that 90% guaranteed product anywhere in the industry in the UK. And of course, the time it takes to invest in the app and to engage in discussions and complete discussions about entering into commercial relationships, so with the likes of the Law Society. But unfortunately, we like to cover the ground as quickly as we can. Lawyers don't really move that quickly, as quickly as we do. So it just takes time to build momentum in terms of lead generation and so on. But there are enough of the right building blocks in place that I think the graph from your side of the it's always going to do this. We can't just straight line. Thank you very much.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.